Happy New Year, Nomiax! As podcast fans, you probably already know it's bad news because you're hearing the editor's voice first, and I am here to tell you that we had some audio recording issues in this episode. You're about to hear Sean introduce it sounding a bit like a dying robot. He will sound better around 2 minutes in, like a robot that's doing okay. And then around 8 minutes in, he will sound like a human again, but it will be a human underneath a heavy wool blanket. I hope you're willing to tolerate these foibles to learn more about our favorite films of 2024. Now take it away, Robot Sean.
It was a year. Boy, was it a year. Let's talk about it. It's the year in review for 2024 on the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Perfect.
Good job, Peanut. Perfect. Yeah, we're recording virtually. I'm a little under the weather.
Oh, no.
I'm really hoping that Peanut decides it's time to go upstairs sooner rather than later, young man. But in the meantime, I'm here with two computer-created people trying to buy fish. It's Camila Adams.
Hello. Happy New Year.
And Robin Hitchcock.
It took me a while to understand what you were going for there, Sean. I thought it was something about 2024 and not about Disney's A Christmas Carol, our last
Fillmore,
episode.
Our most recent episode. Gee, hold on. Let me just get...
Oh, okay.
Come on. I'll give you... Settle in upstairs.
While Sean's doing that... I watched Robert Zemeckis' Beowulf.
Yeah.
Because it was on the Last Chance row, and I wanted to test the theory that I have a weakness for Robert Zemeckis' bullshit, which I do. I also remembered liking that movie, and yes, I still like it. It's still good. I do have a weakness for Robert Zemeckis' bullshit.
Wow.
And also, it made me talk in, I talk in my sleep. Colin texted me at like 5 a.m. when he was awake and I was asleep. You just said in your sleep, are you familiar with the liquid bones theory of anatomy?
I didn't. It's news. It's news that you talk in your sleep.
I do quite a bit.
And I'm impressed that it's that coherent, it's, if terrifying.
It's usually right. Gibberish, but when it's not gibberish, it's cryptic and weird. My freshman year roommates in college always talked about the time that I screamed, "The cross is on my face!" over and over again. Anyway, liquid bones. Robert
Straight
Zemeckis.
To the church. I don't care. We could have...
Right.
I'm not particularly religious. If I'm living with someone and they start yelling that, I'm like, where is the nearest one? I will leave you at the front door. that was, well, we talked, go back and listen to our Christmas Carol episode if you are so inclined to find out all of our Zemeckian thoughts, but it was our least favorite holiday special, except for Robin, who has a weakness for the bullshit. But we are not here for that today. We are here to recap a year of cinema, because boy, do we not want to recap a year of life. We're going to do a bunch of things. Let's knock this out first. Let's take a brief look, everybody, at our favorite movies that we covered on the podcast this year, because we didn't like them that much. This was not a good year for our little experiment here. nothing cracked 90 and only two barely cracked 80. Number five, Mommy wow. Dearest at 66 and a third was our fifth favorite.
Wow. Wow.
And you know, it's a good Oof. Watch.
I mean, it is, but dang.
I'm glad
66?
I watched it. Yeah.
Wow.
Slightly better than that. Burn After Reading, which we all shrugged at, was our fourth favorite movie of the year. 69 and a third.
Damn.
Nice. And a third.
Nice and a third. Bohemian Rhapsody, which I'm actively angry about. Number three. 71 and two thirds. At least a big jump there. Number two, Practical Magic, 81 and two thirds. Thank you, Camila, for forcing okay. that.
Yes.
No problem.
We needed it.
And against all odds, our favorite film of the year, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, 82. Yeah. It's just a good time.
It is just a good movie.
Was Mommy Dearest another one that I like won in a bonus thing or something?
It was.
No, that was mine. Okay. That was me gaming the movie vote system.
Okay, sweet.
And you actually thought you were voting for Whatever Happened to Baby
Jane, right? I completed those two in my mind. But that's, look, we only have five movies that are above the two-thirds, above like a D+.
Damn,
and
it's
two of them,
bunch of womp-womps.
Two of them were things that we chose. Tony Goldwyn has not been our friend this year. What did we do, Tony?
Why is Tony mad at us? Why have we angered the Goldwyn?
When was Plane? Was that this year?
Was Plane this year?
Was that last year? Because remember, we were supposed to go see Plane together, and then Camila couldn't get childcare, so that was it. I'm saying that was the turn.
No, that was 2023. So we can't even. Oh, that.
Then never mind.
He was in something, wasn't he? Wasn't he in Oppenheimer? Because every available
he was. That was last
Hollywood?
Year.
Oh, that was last year.
Yeah.
Damn. Really? Wow.
Yeah, he did not have a movie this year. So he was grumpy and decided to spend his time cursing us, even though we established the Why Tony segment. So sorry, Tony, we'll be better. I don't know what you want us to say.
Please.
Yeah, show mercy.
It's like I've been doing my part and watching him on Law and Order.
I have not been. I forgot that he was on Law and Order now.
Yeah.
Which side is he on, the law or the order?
The law. He is the new district attorney.
Tight. Definitely should get back to watching that.
Did anybody see the John Oliver segment about how Law and Order is evil, actually?
No.
Is it like Copaganda, or is it like keeping actors in New York, or what are we talking?
Specifically the Copaganda, to the point that he threaded together all the times where Law and Order directly implies that any defense attorney is the scum of the earth.
Yeah.
You know, just the nature of a criminal having a defender is not good in the Law and Order universe.
They do that a lot.
Yeah. It is kind of annoying. I still like watching it.
Oh, yeah, me too. Come on.
I'll never stop.
Listen, sometimes you need to stare at the screen and don't need to make a choice.
Law and Order is such a good example of why the formula works is sometimes all you need.
Exactly.
Like, they could just plug and play Law and Order episodes for the rest of human history, and I would be like, yep.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah,
I will watch this if I am in a hotel room.
A 75th season? Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, sign me up.
More likely to do so if our friend Tony Goldwyn, who we want to be nice to us, is appearing on that week's episode. As mediocre as those were, they sure were a lot better than our worst film of the year. Norbit, easily our worst film of the year at a 6 2/3, also our lowest score of all time.
Wow. Yeah, rightfully so.
Everyone should be ashamed. And very briefly, no surprises here. Camila's favorite movie of the year was Bohemian Rhapsody at 93.
Wow. More than Mommy Dearest? Huh.
Yeah. You love that toothy man. And
love
and
the Rami.
And his journey from singer to still a singer.
I'm so glad that Camila liked that movie. And I did, because I came into that studio being like, this is going to be embarrassing for me. And then it was worse. Embarrassing for Sean.
Yes. Yeah.
Not really. Everyone else in the world agrees with you.
Yeah.
Camila's worst, it's Norbit, which she gave a 5. Robin's top, you have to make your pick because it's a tie.
Ooh.
You gave a 79 to Pirates of the Caribbean and you gave a 79 to The French Lieutenant's Woman.
Oh, I'm obviously picking The French Lieutenant's Woman.
Clearly.
You've heard it here. The best thing on the show this year was Meryl Streep and Jeremy Irons not fucking for a while. Did they get together? I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Yeah. Robin's
the
worst.
The actor versions of them do.
Certainly.
Yes.
Robin's worst, Norbit at a 3. I also have a tie between Pirates of the Caribbean and, what did I write down? Practical Magic. Both of those I gave an 80. I got to give it to Pirates.
Okay.
It's a Disney adult that I am. My worst, hey, guess what? It's Norbit.
Yeah, there it is.
Overly kind 12. That's the show, but what about the wide world of film beyond? We each have a top 5 for you, and we'll sprinkle some extra little segments in there in between. Let's start with Camila. I want Robin to go last because I know Robin has been on the tear of all tears to end the year. Camila.
Okay,
so are we down?
So we're ranking these. Okay, all right.
If you feel like it.
Okay, I cannot. All right, now there's a lot of pressure. All right, so
in no particular order.
In no particular order, I've got Blink twice.
Very good.
Underrated. I can't believe that came and went and the people don't talk about it.
Seriously.
There are so many lesser movies that people have adopted from this year.
Like, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Like, I keep thinking about it to this day. And I couldn't, like, for like 2 weeks, that's all I wanted to talk about with anybody. I'm just like, have you seen Blink twice? Anybody? I'm like looking online for people who have seen Blink twice so I could talk about it. And, they're few and far between. And it was an amazing movie. It was a great experience, a lot to unpack, a lot to think about. And, the soundtrack was also was magnificent. So that was that Day of the Fight with
which
Michael
I watched
Pitt.
Last week.
Yeah,
Camila, you made me cry so much.
Oh,
I
my
mean,
God.
It's not like you made the movie, but you were the reason I watched it because you recommended it.
And sometimes, you know, yes, like you need a good cry.
Yeah,
and a movie is a good reason to give that to you. And it was for a reason. Like, it wasn't like a, you know, the world has no meaning type of cry and sob, but it was a beautifully done movie. I think right now it has limited release. So if anybody, whenever it comes to streaming, I doubt it'll come to Pittsburgh, you should go see it. It was just so well acted. And, you know, shout out to Jack Houston. What's his name again?
That sounds true.
Yeah. The first time director, first time screenwriting. And, you know, most people might know him as the half-face guy from Boardwalk Empire. Also, was he Angelica Houston's son?
I think he's Danny Houston's son. He's a Houston.
He is one of the Houstons of the Hollywood empire. A Quiet Place, Day One. That was another one, another fave. Just a perfectly well done horror, drama, thriller film. And
Heartbreaker.
Heartbreaker. I loved it much more than the original one, as well as wasn't there a part two?
There was.
Yeah, much more than that one as well. Speak No Evil, the remake, because James McAvoy will get all of the glory for he's like the best villain of 2024 in my book. Ugh, God, that movie is so it was just crazy. And Abigail, that was a really fun newish take on vampire horror movies that I saw this year. And the little girl, I meant to write her name down, who played Abigail, she was amazing, and it was fun and funny and also terrifying. So those are my top five.
That's a good list, three of which I have not seen because I'm not a horror person.
I successfully snuck Alicia Weir as the young girl's name from Abigail.
You.
I got her through to a Critics' Choice Award nominee for your young actor or actress. I don't think she's going to win. I'm just glad that somewhere that child saw their name acknowledged as you were great and we're afraid of you.
Yeah. Well done.
And I did want to say that Blink Twice is, I think, going to be on Amazon in a couple weeks. So I was like looking at the, you know, what's coming this month. So it's definitely coming to some streaming soon. Absolutely watch it. That is a movie that I had really mixed feelings about, but I also recommend, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it was super interesting.
It gives you a lot to think about and a lot to talk about, too.
Yes.
So I feel like you would walk out of that movie on, like, very much hating it or very much loving it.
Very
much confused.
Yes.
About your feelings. There's no way you're going to walk out, meh.
Definitely
you're going to have strong feelings.
I think also the thing about the movie that has stuck with me so much is the performances. I just think, you know, like Naomi Ackie and the other main chick whose name is escaping me. She was also in Hitman.
Maybe.
They just do so much with, because there's so many times that they are like doing what the fuck with their face.
Yeah. Yeah.
While like playing a part that is just so satisfying. And Gina Davis and Christian Slater and like Haley Joel Osment even, like just the cast is stacked.
Yes.
And they are all, Kyle MacLachlan, like they all get it. Yeah. Good movie.
Do you mean Adria Arjona? perhaps?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
And also maybe from Arrested Development. I loved the chemistry between her. Yeah, I love the chemistry between her and Naomi. Like, you really bought that they were besties.
Yes, totally.
Excellent picks from Camila. Before we move on, let's have some negativity in our lives. Robin suggested, let's add in the one movie you'd like to punch.
And let me clarify, we'll see what you both picked. But what I mean, so I don't know if this is what you took the assignment as, but what I mean is it's not the worst movie you saw this year.
Right, right.
It's the movie that you are the most mad at.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, and you would just like to give it a little bop on the nose. So, Camila, what do you want to watch?
Okay, I had three here, and thank you for your clarification as to what the assignment was. So that takes away one easily. And Baby Girl, I guess. Baby Girl. Because that one, it had so much potential. It had, like, the premise of it, I understand, and it's very relatable, especially to women our age and older, but I feel like the execution was poor, and like you could have done so much better. It was almost there, and then just took away.
How could I punch anything but Megalopolis? I mean, it's so easy. Nothing is putting its chin out more to be punched. But man, never assume that every thought that goes through your head is brilliant, because if you do, you might end up making Megalopolis, let alone spending hundreds of millions of dollars selling a winery and making it everyone in Hollywood's problem, only for no human beings except me and Robin, me reluctantly, ever seeing the product of that. It's just for the few moments that are like cinema, there are 300 moments for each of those moments that are like, why did you want me to see this? There is no more pretentious project this or many other years.
I am still happy that Megalopolis exists, and I'm still happy I saw it, and I'm still happy that while Platinum exists, I find myself more confused as time passes by those people who were like, no, but it's actually brilliant. Like, there are very few of those. There are a few people who are that way. And I don't know, especially after seeing The Brutalist, I'm like, no, The Brutalist is what a super pretentious, insist upon itself, I have the world understood in my brain and I'm going to unspool it in front of you in the form of art that actually feels like a movie made on purpose, unlike Megalopolis. So anyway.
So then, Robin, what movie are you punching?
So I thought about punching Mufasa.
Okay.
But it feels too mean.
Poor little guy.
So instead, I mean, we could talk about that a little bit more if we want to, but basically the main thing about Mufasa is that no one wants this. Nobody wants that movie. Nobody wants to watch it. And I did watch it, and I felt a theater, you know, a quarter full of people going, why does this exist, and why are we watching it?
Why did we come here by choice?
Yes. Disney production, the prequel to one of their biggest films of all time, easily lost its opening weekend to Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Right. Think about this.
Yeah.
Right. And in Lion King 2019, like, my biggest grievance was that they rewrote the character of Scar so that he is not a bitchy, gay-coded snob kind of lion, and instead is in love with Sarabi. And they doubled down on that. The origin of the conflict between Mufasa and Scar is Sarabi. And that is so fucking stupid. I want to scream.
Yeah, that's a real cop out.
Okay, so I guess I just did punch Mufasa, even though it felt too mean. But the
is the movie you're not punching?
Yeah, jeez.
No, I mean, the other one, I don't really want to talk about it. But fuck Civil War and fuck Alex Garland. That movie fucking sucks. And fuck all the 4-star reviews from guys who went to journalism school and only liked it because they think journalism is the most important service in the world.
How many stars did I give it?
Not that many.
I gave it 3. So I'm 6. And I got an English degree, not a journalism degree. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the biggest disappointments. Even though I kind of liked it, it was deeply disappointing because it is very... You know, you could have done something, and instead you were, you boy, did you get on that soapbox.
And I just think, you know, like, set it in fucking England. If your whole thing is like, this is not about American politics, then don't set it in America, you fuckhead. Like, we're about to have a really shitty time of it over here.
Yeah.
And I don't need some British guy's jerk off about it.
It was way less of a jerk off than Men. Did you see Men?
I unfortunately did see Men.
Yeah.
It is absolutely better than Men.
Well, those are the punchable films of 2024. Here's the ones that I liked. I did a top 10 list, so these are ranked. Am I going to shoehorn in twice as many movies as everybody else? Yes, yes, I am.
Oh, but I have a long quickly. List of honorable mentions.
Number 10 was Driveway Dolls. More people should watch that. Number 9 was The Piano Lesson. More people should watch that. I mean, it's Netflix, so maybe everyone in the world and watch that and we just don't know. But great performances and a great adaptation. Number 8 is Love Lies Bleeding. Love Lies Bleeding is great.
I liked it a lot.
I watched that very late. And
Me too.
I feel like Love Lies Bleeding and I Saw the TV Glow like were this is my favorite dark drama of like different people picked different one or the other. And Love Lies Bleeding is such a better choice.
Mm.
Like I Saw the TV Glow is kind of, it's fine. It has its things, but
they're just very
bleeding.
Different. I really like them both. And so I don't think I can come out and be like, this one is way better. I really, really like them both. They're very different. Love Lies Bleeding is much more accessible. Let's put it that way.
And the cast is so good. Kristen Stewart is so good. Katie O'Brien is so good. Ed Harris coming in hot.
Wow.
I have Conclave at 7. I have Challengers at 6. So the top 5. I have Anora at 5. Anora probably threatened number 1, if not, you know, very close to it. It's such a great movie to sit down and get swept up in. I hope people put their phones away, because I think it is very important that you go on the journey from, like, interesting, sexy slice of life to pure comedy to pure tragedy and, like, let that go with you and run through you as you're watching Anora.
Wow.
And Mikey Madison, probably the performance of the year.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that a little bit more, but, you know, not just a star turn, a I am the biggest star in the world turn in the space of 2.5 hours. Number 4, A Quiet Place. What are we, day zero? Year one? It's
day
my
one?
Fourth favorite movie of the year, and I still don't know the title. A Quiet Place.
Day one.
Day one.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody had this sequel was great this year. And for some people, that was Gladiator 2. And for some people, that was, what trilogy got capped off this year? I don't know. Everyone has had a main Deadpool and Wolverine. A lot of people had this actually is the galaxy brain choice, to use a dumb meme, is Quiet Place, because it did so much more than either of the other ones did. The first two movies in that series are a fun sci-fi thriller. Like, right. Oh, cool premise, let's have a good time. This has heart
layers.
And soul and goes so far beyond just, we need to be quiet or we'll get eaten. And Lupita is so good. We shouldn't be surprised at that. My number 3 is Sing Sing. This was my number 1 for a long time. I think that, you know, there's a 100 movies every year that aim for, we're going to make a serious comment on a serious subject. And 80 of them aren't very good. And 10 of the ones that are very good are so brutal and unrelenting that you don't actually want to watch them. And so few are able to do that in a way that's an interesting and engaging story. And such a great story was pulled out of these people that comments on the prison system so much better than so many movies that try to do it more directly. Robin, I know you talked about it last time. Camila, I think you just watched it.
Yeah, I just watched it. Admittedly, I didn't really, I had to watch it in chunks because of Kaj and all that stuff. So, like, I feel like I probably would have gotten more out of it if I had been able to just, like, sit and just, like, really immerse myself into it. Also, I kind of have this shield up whenever I watch any prison movies. Like, I'm always, like, scared of what they're going to show or what they're going to imply is happening about, you know.
Yes.
Like, yeah. But I really enjoyed Clarence.
Macklin.
God, like, his performance was amazing. And, you know, Coleman Domingo, I mean, it just kind of goes without saying, but it was I was really surprised by that guy, Clarence. He really did an amazing job. And I didn't really do too much research or looking into is he a trained actor? Like, is he, I think I just saw quickly that he was someone who was in the prison system and he took part in this theater.
I think everybody program. In the film, except for Coleman Domingo, the guy who played Mike, and who I just saw in Big Girls Don't Cry, They Get Even, which is a movie from the 90s that I love. And I was like, oh my God, it's Mike. And Paul Racy, the director. I think everybody else is a veteran of the program.
Wow. Okay.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So good for them.
That's such a feel-good thing, too, that we're watching people who were in a program. You know, there's so many fields where people get that, like, moment of glory, mm-hmm. right? And I'm sure on that night performing, Robin has memorized the name of the play.
Breaking the Mummy's Code.
Oh. Breaking the Mummy's Code. I'm sure on that night, Breaking the Mummy's Code, they all felt like $1 million, and then they have to deal with, like, okay, that was kind of my moment. And for that to turn into, actually, I was in this movie.
Yeah.
That got nominated for Oscars.
The ending did make me cry, like, once he walked out and they got together. Like, once...
Rolling down the window.
Oh my God.
Very emotional.
Jesus. Like, for that alone, like, Coleman, like, nobody who just, like, rolls down a window and sticks his head out of a moving car window, and I'm like, like, who else can make me elicit that type of emotion?
Yeah, if anyone threatens my declaration that Mikey Madison is the performance of the year, it's Coleman Domingo in Sing Sing. Number two, this is my big surprise. This is my last minute shot up the rankings. Number two, The Wild Robot. The Wild Robot is now part of my soul. I don't know why. Fundamentally, this is a movie about reluctant motherhood.
I'm like, Sean, as one of the most firmly anti-parenting people I know, I'm like, you love this movie about finding meaning in life by parenting?
Oh, geez, I need to watch this.
I mean, I think I attached more to the baby goose, the gosling.
I see.
than the robot. The gosling who, while he is firmly of his species, can never feel truly at home among them. Like, that spoke to me more than the motherhood aspect of it. But just in, can we have a heartfelt, meaningful, beautiful animated film that is not part of a franchise, that is not the rehashing of an IP, but more than that, is not overly message-focused, overly like, here's what we're doing with this, is fundamentally just a quick quality work of animation. A lot of people would say this too about Flow. I think Flow is great as well. Wild Robot, it was so beautiful on top of that.
It's so interesting. Sorry to cut you off, Sean. I am 100% that asshole who is like, everything everybody who loves The Wild Robot says, I'm like, but Flow was better. And the one thing is, like, people are like, yeah, well, the Flow has the weird, like, bizarrely half-rendered animals, right?
The dogs' mouths don't look right.
Right, yes. And it's like, to me, I thought that the Wild Robot animation was kind of ugly, which I feel like nobody else agreed with, but I just was like, aesthetically, this is not working for me. And with Flow, I accepted the aesthetics of those animals, and that fucking cat ends up looking more like a cat, like more like my baby Sprink, than the fucking photorealistic creatures in Mufasa. So, like, yeah.
No, Flow is great. I like
Flow
as well.
Flow is hovering around my top five.
Well, a good year for animation overall, certainly. Because yes. Inside Out 2 was good. Wallace and Gromit was good. I haven't watched Memoir of a Snail yet, but people say that's great.
It's very, very bleak. And Australian.
Well, I'll watch it when we're done here.
Yeah.
But I love The Wild Robot. And especially if you do have... I know people who do have kids around the target age who haven't seen this yet. It will be so much better for you for The Wild Robot to be on a loop than Frozen or Moana or Encanto and whatever you have.
Right on. Especially if you have a weird kid obsessed with death.
Yeah.
Because The Wild Robot is very like, death is coming for you. Not like Flo, which is like gravity, but for animals. But like, The Wild Robot is very much a movie where death exists and children are, you know, small animals are aware of it and afraid of it.
Well, the other day, Kaj told me that she was taking her pet flamingo to the vet, and then a few minutes later, she informed me that it had died.
That's R.I.P. Let's have a moment for what's the imaginary flamingo's name?
she didn't have a doesn't have a name for it. It's just a stuffed stuffed flamingo.
Clearly not super attached to it.
No.
No.
She wrote her off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it's a very supporting character, background character in her usual loop.
And if Wild Robot is number two, that can only leave Nosferatu for number one. Look, I know I am who I am. Why would I lie to you? Of course, that's my number one movie of the year. I do stand by. I don't think there's a better Dracula or Nosferatu, the original Nosferatu being an unlicensed Dracula. You know, the Universal Monsters one is great. It's also kind of slow and stagey. The Francis Ford Coppola one is great. It's also like deeply weird and showy.
So weird.
The Werner Herzog one is great. It's also a tortured meditation on life, like everything by Werner Herzog. I just think Dracula is one of my favorite endlessly retellable big screen stories. I think this is the best version of it. So, number one movie of the year. Before we move on, here's another thing we want to throw out. Your most anticipated film of 2025. Woo-hoo. We'll go in the same order. And there's a bunch. I didn't. There are way more that I'm excited about than I realized. Camila, what's yours?
I've got three. And seeing as y'all said, like, you said top 10, your top 10 faves.
Sure.
I'm just going to go ahead and do, like, the three.
Yes.
Yes.
Reclaim your time.
Saw 11.
Yeah.
I was hoping that it was supposed to come out this year or 2024. It did not make it. But this this spooky season for 2025, that is it. And if anybody who knows me, you know that Saw franchise is my jam. No matter how horrible they end up being, I am on this journey.
Is Tobin Bell back? Did we find another 2 months in the timeline of his life?
I think so. Where
he could have theoretically built another torture game we hadn't talked about yet?
Absolutely. Yep.
Excellent.
So I do love that for him. 28 years later, I really loved the first one. The second one was good, too. And this one, it's crazy to me that they're willing to go ahead and do it. And then after I saw the trailer, which it looks like that Cillian Murphy is one of the zombies, like, just in the background. Like, that's fucking nuts to me. And I'm excited about it. And okay, I guess all three are horror movies. And finally, number one is Sinners, starring Michael B. Jordan, directed by Ryan Coogler.
Ooh,
yeah.
And it's a pair of twin brothers, Michael and I don't know the other guy's name, come home from war or something. Like, I think it's set in like the 30s, maybe. They come home from war, and then there's some sort of like evil afoot happening like in their hometown, ghosts and all that business. So it looks really good and look super creepy.
Ryan Coogler's directing it, and Michael B. Jordan's in it twice. It's what more do you need?
Right.
No, that was close to my list as well. Yeah, I mean, there are others that were very close. Maggie Gyllenhaal has The Bride, her Bride of Frankenstein remake.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Supposed to be coming out. Unfortunately, there are already rumblings like Warner Brothers owns it and they don't seem too confident in it.
Oh,
will it get Batgirl? Hopefully that's not the case. Bong Joon-ho's follow-up to Parasite, he still hasn't done. Like, this is his first narrative feature since Parasite, Mickey 17 with Robert Pattinson. That looks really great. But as I would be lying to you if I didn't pick Nosferatu, listen, Guillermo del Toro is making a Frankenstein. Why would I lie to you and not
Holy
say that
cats.
That's my most anticipated movie? Like, again, another thing that is completely made for me. I couldn't be more attached to it. I'm more attached to Frankenstein than I am to Dracula. So this is absolutely has me all over. It's going to Netflix. I hope there's a little theatrical release because I think it's going to be really good on the big screen.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac is Victor Frankenstein and Jacob Elordi is the monster. But the next two names on the cast list in unannounced roles, Oscar Isaac is great for Victor Frankenstein. Jacob Elordi is the monster. The next two names on the cast list are Mia Goth and Christoph Waltz. I need this film.
Yes.
Christoph Waltz.
2-time Academy Award winner.
Yeah, get it.
Robin, yours?
I just have one, which is, and I don't even know what it's called, but it's Mission Impossible 8.
The final one, whatever.
It's possibly called Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2 and finally called Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning.
I think it's The Final Reckoning.
Yes. So Which is funny because then there will be a part one with no part two. But man, we haven't actually had the chance really to talk about it on this show.
Which is weird.
Right? I love that franchise. It's the truth of the matter. And so the trailer looks great. Angela Bassett is back.
Yes.
So that's the movie I am looking forward to watching this year.
And I don't like that franchise very much, but loved Dead Reckoning Part 1. So yeah. I'm on board. Well, Robin, this brings us to yours.
Okay.
I feel like your journey to a top five this year had the most
drama,
the most strife, the most strum and drang. You really were working at it. So
well,
I'm saving you for last.
So, you know, listeners know that I try to watch every movie that gets nominated for an Oscar every year. And I've been doing that for about 10 years. So I often have this marathon of like award season movies, but it usually happens in February. So this year, as our first year with the Pittsburgh Film Critics Association Awards, I had to do it, but on my own. I had to decide what am I going to try to get nominated, right? And so it was like, was amazing how different it was doing essentially the same thing I do every year for the last 10 years, was with the slight difference of the list isn't written for you and you have to finish in December. So that was like the overall journey that I had. And so that's why Sean was saying it so dramatically. And then also, you know, I'm going through a career change or I'm ending my career. Let's put it that way. And so I am
retiring, everyone. Congratulations.
I'm going to be a 40-year-old retiree. No, I'm switching careers to I don't know what yet. And so I'm trying very hard not to think about my real life. And therefore, watching movies has been really helpful to that end. All of this is to say is that Anora is also in my number five spot. You know, I said the reason I'm not like movie of the year is because that first act where Sean was like sexy slice of life, I definitely felt a little unmoored at that point in the film. But once the hijinks begin, I have not had that much fun at the movies in so long, or at least not in a movie where no train falls off of a mountain. And And like Sean said, Mikey Madison is just such a charmer and just has so much star power. And it's just the kind of movie that reminds me of why I like movies so much. In my number four spot, Thelma.
Yeah.
With June Squibb. Just a very sweet movie about family and love. And one of the very few movies I've seen about aging that makes it seem like something I can tolerate doing. And in my three spot, I've got Conclave.
Nice.
Which is similar to Sean saying, The Wild Robot is part of my personality. My friend Abby watched it yesterday and said, this movie is my whole personality now. It's the kind of movie I saw it because I had an afternoon free and I had heard it was kind of good. I enjoyed it while I was watching it. And then kept thinking about it. And I watched it again recently with Colin. And on the second watch, it felt so much more intentional that it's as good as it is, if that makes sense. You know how sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, I'm really enjoying this. And then you watch it again and you're able to see what they did to make it work.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I now not only enjoy this, I respect the hell out of it.
All right.
So that's how Conclave shot up in my rankings to the three spot. Number two, A Different Man.
Wow.
Just like I said, one of those movies that has so much complexity and is not an easy experience, but is worth the effort of trying to like pick up what they're putting down. And Sebastian Stan, Adam Pearson, and Renata, Norwegian girl, Renata Reinsve. Yes.
I believe you.
Yes. all three of them are so, so, so good playing really weird characters, especially Renata. It's just like that character is a weirdo and you accept her as a real person. And she's the least important of the three characters. And so it's very crucial that her weirdness works. And so thank God that they got that actor. And also to reference Abby again, she also was like, I think it really helps that she's European.
Mm.
She gets away with a lot of that movie by being European. Anyway, A Different Man. Highly recommend it. And my favorite movie of the year is Nickel Boys. Nickel Boys is about two kids in a Florida reform school, and it is shot from a first-person perspective that alternates between the two of them. And I found it so moving. The first-person perspective worked so well for me. It never felt gimmicky. You know, like there's gimmicky things like, you know, I love the movie Here. That's also in my top 10 for the year. That never stops feeling like a gimmick. In Nickel Boys, it almost immediately just becomes, you just accept it as this is the movie I'm watching. And then there are like little moments where the perspective really matters that you're like, oh my God, yeah, it's unusual to watch a movie that's like this. Do you know what I mean? But for the most part, you just exist in that story. And I think I also really, it resonated with me extra because like that whole system of like what is now called like the troubled teen industry is like of particular interest to me. And most of the stuff that I have, I've mostly like listened to podcasts and watched documentaries about it, is from a very late 20th century white perspective. And so watching a movie from mid 20th century black perspective also just gave something that I have been thinking about a lot recently so much more context. And so that was, I think, another reason I love that movie so much.
I started watching it, and I really appreciate, I like the first person perspective too. And it was just like, I love the, like catching the reflections of the person of, you know, who we are looking, whose eyes we're going through. So yeah, I'm excited to finish it. And on the juvenile delinquency system, have you ever seen the documentary Kids for Sale? I think that's what it's called.
Yes.
Yeah. That was like the first one that I saw.
Yes.
About that.
Yes.
Yep.
I hate the overuse of this word, but it is very immersive.
Yeah.
In that it's not like there are so many found footage movies that just put the camera or put the person's head where a film camera would go. Mm-hmm. Nickel Boys and the director, Ramel Ross, really uses the camera like you use your eyes, just to stare at weird things in the distance, and you know, the way that it moves is brilliantly done.
Like that one one shot that comes into mind is when he's laying down and listening to his grandmother talk on the phone, and we're like this, you know, looking at his arm. Yeah.
And Anjanae Ellis Taylor, I want to hug her.
Oh goodness, she's been killing it.
she's a great actor. The other thing I wanted to say about the Nickel Boys perspective thing, like that movie starts to mean different things as it goes, right? It's like the first time they have a perception shift to Turner, you realize that Elwood doesn't like making eye contact with people, which is not something that I picked up on until the perspective shifts to someone who does like making eye contact or is tolerant of making eye contact with people, things like that. And then, you know, I don't, because Camila hasn't finished it, and I assume none of our listeners have watched this yet because it's not out yet. I won't get into the end of it, but that also just is really a very profound perception shift that it's making me want to cry right now.
Oh, man.
So anyway, really excellent movie. Please see it. Yay.
We don't have a consensus. I was hoping that one film would be in all of our top fives.
I don't think there was.
So I could be like the winner. But no, I mean, Quiet Place was in mine and yours, Camila. Anora was in mine and Robin's.
Yeah.
Nothing was in all three.
That's wild.
So I guess I need to watch A Quiet Place Day One. I really don't want to.
Why not?
it's not scary and it'll make me sad.
It's not that scary.
I'll tell you the one thing you're going to need to know. The cat will be fine.
Okay. That,
if it'll, just
wait a
go
second.
In knowing.
Hang on. No, it won't. I guess that's also that's true with Flo also, by the way, is that like the cat survives that film, but like there's no comfort to the cat surviving that film.
I'm not telling you that the cat's having a great time. But I'm,
that cat is so unbothered in A Quiet Place.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, well, dogs probably more. I feel like dogs would transition into a post-apocalyptic world with basically no interruption. Cats are like, I'm less comfortable than I used to be, but if anything, there's more mice and rats available to me. So,
watch Flo.
Yeah, watch. No, Flo is very, very good. Well, those are our lists. It's just watch any one of those movies. Watch any one of the 13 movies we just named. You'll be glad you did.
Wait, can I throw in one more Anyamenchi?
Yes.
It's Maria, Pablo Larraín's Maria, which wasn't even in my top 10 that I voted for the awards, but I did really enjoy the film Maria, which is on Netflix. And if you like movies about bitches, you'll like Maria.
Yeah, I do like how often that movie is like, you want me to be a movie? I will not.
I don't go to restaurants to eat. I come to be adored.
Well, if we're throwing in honorable mentions, Blink Twice, Dune, Here, In a Violent Nature, Late Night with the Devil, Nickel Boys, Night Bitch, The People's Joker, Seed of the Sacred Fig, and The Substance. There. 20. That, now I'm all the way up to a top 20.
All right.
Oh, God.
But yeah, Blink Twice was in my honorable mentions list. Here was in my honorable mentions list. And Nickel Boys was as well, to overlap a little bit.
Well, I guess The Substance would be an honorable mention for me. Is that...
Robin, have you?
The Substance?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. I talked about it on the show.
That is...
That's right.
That movie
not
is...
Not an honor... Oh, yeah, because you... Yeah, I
didn't
remember.
Like it.
Not one of your
I mean, I
mentions.
Liked things about it.
The movie was Motherhood. that was the take that I got from it.
The Substance?
Yes.
Say that was... more. I need to know more about what you mean.
Well, just like, okay, she splits open and, you know, delivers another person, for one, like for most mothers, that is the correct thing. Two, the whole, there is no you and her, it's we, which, you know, you find yourself when you have a child, you do this whole, like, we're going to take a bath now. We're going to eat now. We're going to, you know, we're going to tie your shoes, you know, that kind of thing. So that you do that an awful lot, and not to mention, you know, just of normal, just like constantly worrying about them and all that. And then so like, and then the whole, like, them sucking the life out of you in your youth. Gone, basically. Like, people try to say kids will keep you young. No, they won't. They don't. So yeah, so like every time the younger version of her would like, I just need 5 more minutes. I just need, you know, a couple more days, blah, blah, blah. Just that's the whole, yes. So that's what that was one of the perspectives I took away from The Substance.
That's really smart. I never would have seen that because I'm not a mother. Thank you for that. That's so smart.
Maybe don't watch The Wild Robot. Okay. Because if you were sent on a motherhood journey by The Substance, I shudder to think when a movie is trying to send you there, what will happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Night Bitch took it there. Well, obviously. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, all of this. I get it.
We have one more little segment for you, but that'll take the number one song spot. First, we got to draw a movie. Look, Spooky's over. Holiday is over. Let's just draw a movie, everybody.
Yeah.
And that movie is Ralph Breaks the Internet. Okay, sure.
Didn't we already watch that?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay.
You guys have probably I feel like you guys have referenced it, if not spoken about it in full. But it's been referenced a few times.
It's better than the first one. It's certainly not veto worthy.
No, like, absolutely not.
There's a lot to go over there. I don't know what that is now. I can't think of it at the moment, but I'm sure there is. Something, something, the internet era, blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
Yada, yada.
Okay.
It's
why is it Ralph Breaks the Internet and not Wrecks the Internet?
They talk about it in the film.
Okay.
I got very excited because we were like 3 spots away from both of the first 2 Quiet Places, and I'd be like, the conversation continues.
Thank God.
Ralph Breaks the Internet is good too. So we will get to that next time. We don't have a what was the number one song in America, but by popular demand,
I have a number one
last
song
episode.
Sorry. What, I have a number one, that? The top song of 2024.
What was it?
Shaboozy, right?
Oh, yeah.
No.
No.
The number one song of 2024 was I Had Some Help by Post Malone featuring Morgan Wallen.
Nope.
It
that's
achieved
not true.
The highest weekly sales and streams for a song in 2024.
I don't even know what that is.
I have no idea.
I mean, this is, you know, one of the big narratives musically of the year is, you know, the way that country is seeping into the other genres. But I don't care and I don't like it.
Wait. You don't care about country?
No, I don't care about this stuff. Like, the Shaboozy song is great. That's fine. We all like Jelly Roll.
Do we?
But he seems fine.
Okay.
But, like, the way that there are more and more, like, that's Post Malone and Morgan Wallen, there's more and more, like, you know, here's a song with a pop singer and a country singer. The great wall that separated country from the other pop genres is coming down. And okay, fine. You know,
the last time we recorded a year-end episode was 2019. And we had this conversation. I just listened back to this and we talked, it was Lil Nas X's year with Old Town Road. So this whole country coming, it's been coming for us for a while.
Can't wait to see what pandemic hits to keep the pattern.
Probably bird flu.
Yeah, bird flu. Bird flu is coming in hot. But first, here's how we're doing this. By popular demand after the recent string, people love when we have incorrect music takes. So we're going to go around the room one more time with a bad music take. Let's keep the order. Camila.
Stone Temple Pilots is a better band than Pearl Jam.
Ooh!
Don't at me.
I'm not at you! I love Stone Temple Pilots.
I don't think that's that controversial.
Really? Because I feel like Stone Temple Pilots gets left off a lot of grunge and 90s lists. A lot of, for a while, like even in the mix of it, and when Stone Temple Pilots came out, there was a whole thing about, you know, a lot of music critics were not giving Scott Weiland his due, calling them just kind of like an imitation grunge band and whatnot. And so, yeah, it was, they weren't given the respect that I feel like they deserve. And Pearl Jam, everybody was up their ass like for years and still to this day, in my opinion. And I've never gotten through an entire Pearl Jam album thinking, yeah, this is the shiznit, or even that this is listenable.
I mean, Pearl Jam are much bigger. Pearl Jam announced some concert here and it sold out in a second. Like, Pearl Jam are a much, much bigger band. But I think I agree with you. Like, no. Pearl Jam are fine.
Right.
But they're
also
very samey, you know.
Yes. But I think it's just in the mass, most people prefer or listen to Pearl Jam or like Pearl Jam or say they're better. Mm-hmm.
I love Pearl Jam. I love Pearl Jam. But I also love Stone Temple Pilots. And a huge part of my personality, unfortunately, comes from the moment on the bus in fourth grade when Will Smith, who I had a crush on, not that Will Smith, said, I was talking about Stone Temple Pilots with him. And he was like, oh, yeah, name two of their albums. And I think they only had two albums at the time. But I could name them, which I can't now.
Probably Core and Purple.
Yes, correct. Yes. And like the fact that I was able to pull that information as, on the bus to impress this boy I had a crush on is why I need to know everything. This is why I am the way I am.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like Stone Temple Pilots was not on my radar until whenever Interstate Love Song came out.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And I saw the video with Scott Weiland in his cowboy hat, the big sunglasses and feather boa. And I'm like, who is this man? And from that moment on, like, I remember it so vividly. I was working at Hudson's, a department store, and we were playing it on, you know, the videos that you play on the, that they play on the TVs. And that's what, the way I saw it and what, and how it all registered to me. And so that shit, and I cried real tears when Scott Weiland died.
Me too.
So, yeah. So, STP.
I saw Stone Temple Pilots at an X-Fest, and they were good. But the thing I remember is Everclear being mad that Stone Temple Pilots were headlining over Everclear. And I like Everclear. I might even, I've definitely listened to Everclear more. But even in the moment, I was like, you're Everclear.
Though. Right, yeah. Let's calm down, guys. Yeah. Let's just calm down. Like, I do enjoy a couple of their songs. Let's relax.
Well, he was just grumpy that day. here's my incorrect take. The Who are bad.
No,
I don't want to listen to The Who.
You're wrong.
Ever.
I agree.
You're both wrong.
Thank you.
How dare you?
I like Bob O'Reilly. That's it. It's like the same tone hitting my ears for 6 minutes, and you're convincing me that there's a song in there somewhere.
John, that's not how they write songs.
I don't know. It hits me like white noise. The Who sounds like nothing to me.
I can't, like, okay, first of all, everybody's entitled to their opinions. But,
yes.
Sean, you seem like someone who would love The Who's bullshit. Like, you seem like someone who would love Tommy.
Maybe. It's just, it's the wrong kind of bullshit.
Or like a quick one while he's away. I feel like you would be like writing immersive theater based on that story.
Yeah. I like it a little less on the nose. I feel like even lyrically they're a little like, we're telling you a story about a pinball wizard. And I just want Bruce Springsteen telling me about like a guy named Jack who got lost. And I don't actually know the details of his life. Like that's
Happy Jack was a man. I'm gonna send you a song and you're gonna listen to it. Oh. And you're gonna continue to have wrong opinions about it, but at least you will have the context of a quick one while he's away.
Pete Townsend, probably a pedophile. Just mentioning, we don't talk about it enough.
I always forget because we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
We really don't. He just skated on that. No, not a big fan of the... Okay. But it's important because there's a lot of... Mary Beth loves The Who, and I don't care about them at all, and there's so many... And in return, Mary Beth doesn't care about Bruce Springsteen at all. It's important to have that evenness in a couple.
Yeah. We listen, we don't judge.
My bad take comes from working on my end of the year ballot. We have a best song category. So I made a playlist of everything on the shortlist for the Oscars for best original song and also anything that anybody in our membership had suggested. And I remember when Sean was doing his ballot for Critics' Choice, he was, you know, talking about not knowing what to put in song. And he was like, all the songs in Emilia Perez are bad. So, and I just like was like, yeah, I watched that movie. I don't remember any of these songs. Upon making the playlist, I have discovered that I genuinely love the song Mi Camino, which is the song, it's like Selena Gomez's big song in Emilia Perez. And it is the song that I want to be playing when I am on the dance floor on a cruise ship. I've never been on a cruise, but that's what I imagine happens, is that they play songs about deciding you want to love yourself and love your life, and then you jump up and down in kind of sparkly outfit. So yeah, that's my bad take, is that Mi Camino is a great song.
I haven't heard it. I don't have an opinion.
I feel like that wasn't bold enough.
That wasn't bold enough?
I said The Who are bad. I feel
Sean really put himself out there. Yeah.
Then again, this started with you saying that One Direction and the Beatles are roughly equivalent.
I stand by it.